man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, If You Audie Way, and in the virtual booth with me are my two friends. Our first friend, you know him, you love him. We call him the Christmas Zaddy. Always looking good. Always surrounded by books. It's Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what's good?
Oh, well, it's too bad that this isn't a video thing or you would see that I literally am surrounded by books. What's good with me is Tubi, T-U-B as in boy, I, a thing that is a thing that I just never knew about. Like, apparently it got bought by Fox last week, so hopefully what I'm now discovering so cool about it isn't going to be gutted. But in the meantime, it is one of those free with ads streaming services. And they have the most eclectic and unusual library of stuff, like movies that haven't ever been released on DVD, to my knowledge, stuff I've never heard of, movies that are super cool. Yeah, I'm super excited. They have Gillian Armstrong's High Tide, which is another film that she made with Judy Davis in the late 80s. Gorgeous movie. Hasn't been available in the U.S. for ages. They also have Matilda, which is a terrible comedy about a boxing kangaroo with Elliot Gould and Robert Mitchum that I only know about because of the Golden Turkey Awards, but have never been able to see. And now I have. Thanks, Tubi. Also, like, a really far-flung LGBT section. So if you're looking for, like, queer films that played festivals in the last few years, they got a ton of them. They've also got, like, Todd Haynes's Poison and Derek Jarman's Edward II and Rose Troche's Bedrooms and Hallways. So, like, a really cool mix of stuff. So anyway, Tubi, don't be like me. Don't sleep on Tubi. It's got a lot of cool shit.
So the next person I'm going to introduce in the booth, who surprisingly did not have anything to say about Tubi.
Are you well?
People might be thinking there's another guest I'm about to introduce because this is unprecedented. You know her. You love her. We love her more than you do. I'm sorry. It's Drea Clark. What's good?
I had to like give myself a personal challenge to not butt in on Alonzo's what's good. And I did it. Success!
Yay. Achievement unlocked.
I did. I also had like three questions about 2B. So, you know, I'll send them to you after the fact.
Okay.
What's good with me is I have been a longtime RuPaul's Drag Race fan, but I did miss certain seasons. I missed some All-Star seasons. So I have been doing the deepest dive of Drag Race and then also watching all of Trixie Mattel and Katya Zamolachikova. I can't do her last name, but they paired up and do this amazing show on YouTube called and then they have like a Netflix show called Trixie and Katya Like to Watch. They have these things. A lot of this was documented in Trixie's documentary of behind the scenes stuff, but what it all culminated in and what was truly good for me last week, as someone who is self-isolating and watching a ton of drag-related programming, it meant that on the family Zoom, when we were having discussion about the definition of something, I said to my mother, "Bitch, you know those mean the same thing." And like the faces of the Clarks, you do not call Gidget bitch. It was too, I was like, okay, it's bad enough I call everybody else girl. I have now elevated to, anyway. So what's good with me is like my total co-opted drag vernacular is just like out of control.
Oh,
that's cultural appropriation, Drea.
Yes, yes.
Iffy, what's good?
Well, what's good with me is, as you all know, I got a double gooder. I got a double gooder because lots of good stuff. As you know, I've been spending way too much money because I've been stuck at home. And the first thing that we talked about is I got a Oculus Rift S, which I'm going to tell you right now, do not let these scalpers get you. Don't spend too much on these weights. Don't spend too much on this. It was a whole process for me to get this Oculus Rift S because everyone's trying to sell it for $800 because they're sold out everywhere. But I joined a Discord called Now in Stock that automatically alerts you when something is in stock. So like last week when at 1:08, I just happened to be on Discord, got alerted, bought it, by 1:18, it was sold out.
If you want, I can just drive by and you can just throw me bags of your money. Like, we can set up a schedule.
But the second good thing, and if you didn't know, you could do this. Portos, which we can't stand in line for because of the current status, you can actually go to their website and order bake at home kits. And Friday, my potato balls and rufiados, guava and cheese pastries are coming, and they're going to be here, and they're going to go straight in the oven, because that's where we're at now. So if you didn't know, I'm going to put you on notice that you can order Porto's pastries. They will ship it to you. I will say I ordered this maybe 2 weeks ago. It is a kind of a wait, because I think a lot of people know. But yeah, you can still get your Porto's. Don't sleep on it. Speaking of sleeping, don't sleep on this great movie we're going to be talking about, because we're talking about Alice Wu's new rom-com, The Half of It, which is such a treat. And we'll get into that. And of course, we're going to be drafting some quarantine movie character roommates, so you know who we staying with, who we staying with. And of course, as always, we got staff picks. But first, it's time for our new segment. This is your movie life. With movie production halted and movie release days getting pushed back, our news sources for our Itadict segment have run dry, crispy, so dry they beg for water, and yet AMC says don't you dare or we will boycott your movies. So instead, we will take a long voyage through our lives to discuss the films that have shaped who we are today. Since this is our fifth week of the segment, we'll be discussing our mid to late 20s. Also, just a primer, if you didn't know, Trolls did really well on VODs, and AMC is being dumb and saying that they're going to not play any Universal movies because they're salty. But that would be if we had an Itadict, which we don't. So let's start with our guest, Alonzo.
AMC is really not in a position to demand anything from anybody right now.
Like, right now, they have no power.
So, my mid to late 20s. Well, okay, so the new queer cinema as we know it kind of kicked off in 1990, the year that Todd Haynes' Poison, which I mentioned earlier, and Jenny Livingston's Paris is Burning both won the grand jury prizes at the Sundance Film Festival. And the following year, a lot of other LGBT films came. Film critic B. Ruby Rich moderated a panel with all these filmmakers that during which she coined the term the new queer cinema, which really kind of came to sort of dominate the early 90s. It was this major new wave of queer filmmakers, some new, some who'd been around for a while, like Derek Jarman. And, you know, we're really kind of using the relative freedom of indie film to tell the kind of stories that Hollywood was just not touching with a 39.5-foot pole. So I would say then, you know, and I was 23 in 1990. So this hits my sweet spot for this. Of those movies, I mean, there's a lot of great ones and a lot of them that had a lot of impact. But I think the one that I think about when I think about that period and I think about it affecting me personally was Gregor Rocky's The Living End. Because this was a movie that was sexy and angry in a way that I hadn't really seen a whole lot of. I mean, like, Derek Jarman's Edward II was certainly up there for that, but this movie felt so direct and personal. It's about these two guys who have just met, like hooked up once. They're both HIV positive, and they kind of go on this sort of nihilistic road trip where we don't know if they're going to come back from it. We don't know if they're going to, you know, commit violence on other people. There is a scene where one of them almost gets bashed in a grocery store parking lot, and he pulls a gun on these guys. And like, that's a scene we had not been seeing in queer movies at that point. So it was very exciting and just a thrill to watch. And it felt like it was capturing all the stuff that was happening off screen with, like, you know, ACT UP and Queer Nation and the kind of pushback against the Reagan-Bush policies about AIDS and about, you know, just queer people in general. So yeah, The Living End, that's a movie that just, that's a moment for me. That's a thing in my life that I can put a pin in and be like, oh yeah, that shit happened. So that's my pick for sure.
I like that you mentioned that there was like a specific moment in that film that stood out to you as being different from, specifically from the other queer cinemas you'd seen to that point. What was your What would be the departure comparison of like what was a beloved queer film that would be night and day that made a film like that stand out so much?
Like, okay, you know, we had had, say, you know, Merchant Ivory's Morris at that point had happened, which was very sort of lyrical and white linen and hot dudes and, you know, yeah, exactly, like, you know, on playing cricket, you know, and you know, even like Parting Glances, which is a sort of like fun, you know, kind of New York comedy, and HIV is a player in that. The character played by Steve Buscemi in his first big movie role is a rock star with AIDS at that point. But the idea of like, no, we're, you know, there was a gay anti-violence group that started, and I can't remember if it was New York or LA, but basically the motto was "fags bash back." You know, like if fags are going to get bashed, fags are going to bash back. And Living End was the first movie I ever saw where the bashing back took place. And this idea of like, no, we're not just going to take it. We're not just going to be, oh, the poor, sad victims of this disease or of violence or of, you know, discrimination or whatever else. No, we're going to fuck shit up. And so that was exciting.
Well, that's so dope. I like that for your 20s as well, because that's a different energy. Yeah.
I was feeling it in a lot of other ways, and that movie just kind of like.
Oh, what about you, Dre? What are you
getting? So I had moved to Los Angeles, and I had already started. I started as an intern at Slam Dance almost immediately, so I was already dipped my toes into independent film and was taking in a lot. But what started the film that I think of my late 20s of. Beyond having that third eye open for like super low budget American indies was I got much more exposure to art house international film, and that blew the doors off everything. And like many talented filmmakers since then, Wong Kar-wai's In the Mood for Love was something that I remember seeing in my sort of mid to late 20s, and watching it kind of just mouth agape of, it was so beautiful and so transcendent. I was always, and still am, like an enormous reader. I love literature. And there was something that movie moving literature, if that makes sense. Like it felt so much more internal than a lot of films that I'd seen. And instead of having language and me not speaking that language be a barrier, it made me realize like it could truly open doors, like that it could be more immersive if you didn't speak the language, because you're taking in so many cues. And that's a film that like the performances are so silent in many ways, and there's so much like glances and touches and tensions and
cigarette lightings.
Yeah.
That's one of those things where people say like some movies are prose and some movies are poetry. This definitely falls in the latter category, because you're right. It is so much about these long segments where no one's saying anything, but just the way they look at each other and where their hands are and what they're wearing and how they're sweating, all that stuff just adds up. And you know, the old Nat King Cole songs that are playing or whatever. Yeah, that movie is a 10 course banquet.
Well, in addition to the idea of being intimidated by foreign films or subtitled films, mm-hmm. there is an intimidation or maybe a presumed disinterest in films that aren't particularly talky. I'm a talky gal. I love good dialogue. And so watching that film and learning that language of, oh my gosh, no, there's so much story that can be told without dialogue. Resonant.
Mm, for sure.
Yeah.
I can't wait for Iffies.
I'm dying to know.
You know, I was mulling this over, because this there are two ways that I can do this part of my movie life, because I can do my movie life as to who I am, what I do, and then I can do this as to me as a movie fan, you know, because there's right. two, because, you know, I contain multitudes. And like, it's funny because as a nerd, what I'd want to do in these later years is something like Avengers, because it's like, oh, that was such a big moment for nerd movies. We kind of set the stage for better or for worse for this kind of superhero genre and like made it here to stay. And that's a good point to make. But I feel like if I just, you know, bounce around and talk about a movie that kind of was outside of my lane, because I think no matter what, no matter who I ended up being today, I was going to end up seeing Avengers. But as a movie fan, as a, you know, soon to be Who Shot Ya host, I think the movie that stood out to me and where I was like, oh, I need to find more movies like this, like more, because this one I only like heard of and checked it out, was a Big Fan with Patton Oswalt.
Nice.
Where he's like this parking lot employee, like huge fan of the Giants, and he's like obsessed with this player, and the player ends up attacking him, and it's kind of like a dark comedy. But it was that movie, I remember having an impact on me, and being, because that was kind of like, you know, I had like the flavor of the Coens with the Lebowski, and I was kind of following them. But this was kind of like my, I don't like how wide was this release, because I know it only made 200,000 in the box office, but to me, like at the time, it felt like a movie, like, and not quite underground, but like a movie that no one I knew was talking about.
You know, it probably played on like a handful of screens in New York and LA, yeah. and maybe made its way to like, you know, Chicago and San Francisco and Atlanta and other markets like that. But yeah, it wasn't like a giant indie at the time. But I think it's the kind of movie that people have discovered a lot over the mm-hmm. years, particularly as Patton Oswalt has become more well known. And that's, they sort of point to that as like a real breakthrough performance for him. It's like, oh no, he's not just a stand up. He's this really interesting actor. Yeah. You know, it's also part of the kind of the toxic fandom subgenre with yes. like Misery and even that terrible mm-hmm. John Travolta movie that came out last year, you know. yeah. And that's the only way I would compare the two.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I love comparing those two. That you please do a whole paper on that. this one, this was a Sundance film back in the minute. And but I like this too because I already knew Patton and his work at that point. And so it's one of those things. It's always fun to see a comedian or someone, you know, in a totally different vein. And this was a smaller release that I love has gotten kind of extended life through, you know, some things mm-hmm. just disappear into the ether. And this is one that I think is still, if Big Fan was a smaller indie release, I'm curious how you knew about it or how you knew to find it.
It was like one friend who, like, you know, everyone has that friend. Everyone has that friend who, you know, this is probably the friend who was onto microbrews before microbrews blew up. That friend who, you know, had to get it on vinyl. And yeah, they were just like, yeah, because, you know, I was in my comedy career, and it was a comment where it was like, oh, you know, yeah, Patton's a good comedian, but I don't know if you know, he's a great actor too. And I'm not talking King of Queens, you know. And there was that. And so, and yeah, those were hitting the two points. So that was our movie Lives. That was a fun one. I feel like I spiced it up a bit. I spiced
it up.
You
really did.
You
know?
Your mid-20s, which were last week.
We're going to be right back with another show for Maximum Fun. And when we come back, we'll be discussing the half of it.
Video games.
Video games.
Video games. You like them?
Maybe you wish you had more time for them?
Maybe you want to know the best ones to play?
Maybe you want to know what happens to Mario when he dies?
In that case, you should check out Triple Click. It's a brand new podcast about video games.
A podcast about video games? But I don't have time for that.
Sure you do. Once a week, kick back as three video game experts give you everything from critical takes on the hottest new releases,
to scoops, interviews, and explanations about how video games work,
to fascinating and sometimes weird stories about the games we love.
Triple Click is hosted by me, Kirk Hamilton.
Me, Jason Schreier.
And me, Maddie Myers.
You can find Triple Click wherever you get your podcasts and listen at MaximumFun.org.
Bye.
Woo! Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe, and in the virtual booth with me are...
Drea Clark.
Alonzo Duraldi.
And today we're talking about the half of it. Drea, do you mind providing us with a quick synopsis?
Sure can do. So the half of it is about Ellie Chu, who is a shy and introverted but very intelligent teenage girl living in a very small town called Squamish, which you'll know because they say the name of the town many times, and it is Squamish. And so she and her father, who immigrated there from China, live near the railroad tracks. She writes papers for her dum-dum fellow students, which seems to be all of them, just a whole mass of dum-dums. Within that mass of dum-dums is a very kind-hearted, very large boy named Paul Munsky, who approaches her to write a love letter to a girl in their class because he is said dum-dum and she is said good writer. And the girl, Aster Flores, is a delightful and kind and beautiful young woman. And they both happen to share in the feelings of love. So there is a Cyrano de Bergerac sort of shape to this, as Ellie, first through letters and then through texting, sets up wooing the emotional and mental side of Aster. And then Paul Munsky blunders through the physical as he and Ellie become friends. Yeah, that's the half of it. That's the whole of the half of it, guys.
Incidentally, I just want to throw out, in all the time that we've done Who Shot You, we've never had a show that dropped on the same day that the movie did. So we're going to be very mindful about not spoiling anything, because today, May 1st, 2020, when the show drops, is also when the movie becomes available on Netflix. I will say this, though. If you, you know, yes, this is a Cyrano de Bergerac kind of story, but it does not end in the way that other ones do. So don't feel like you already know how this is going to go just because there's an intermediary who's good at writing letters.
Can you give us a brief synopsis on Cyrano de Bergerac for the, you know, I see Casey, he looks stumped. We all know this is Drea as well.
If you saw the Steve Martin movie Roxanne, that's probably the most popular modern iteration of it.
So can we get a brief synopsis of the Steve Martin movie Roxanne for Casey?
Yeah. Cyrano de Bergerac is a, he is witty and a great swordsman and dashing and smart and funny. And is cursed with a huge, huge nose that he thinks is going to sort of, that means that he will never be loved or appreciated by women. Enter the beautiful Roxanne, who is everyone's, you know, ideal, and all the men go crazy about her. And then a third guy, whose name I forget now, is the handsome. Handsome and dashing and on the surface, all the things you would want, but he is a cloth-eared dullard. And he adores Roxanne, but cannot, is not smart enough or romantic enough to woo her in the proper way. So he gets Cyrano to act as his intermediary and write her these beautiful, long, poetic, flowing love letters. And so, of course, she falls in love with idiot guy, thinking that he's the writer of the letters, not knowing that the person that she's really falling in love with in all of this is the big nose Cyrano.
Another great example of this trope is The Truth About Cats and Dogs with Uma Thurman and Janine Garofalo.
Absolutely.
And Ben Chapman. And
Ben Chapman,
a movie I loved, and it probably came out before Ify was born, but it's a similar, this has been it's a nice trope for so many reasons, because it looks at the nature of love and connection and what truly counts as what matters to the people who are falling in love, because
the spiritual connection versus the physical.
Exactly. And I thought that the half of it, this is the first, I think this mainstream anyway, that I can remember that had this sort of queer twist of it, of that it wasn't just, you know, in the source material, Serrano's held back by Cyrano. I can never say his name. I don't talk Italian or whatever. Cyrano is held back because, you know, he thinks he's not attractive enough, or, you know, there's this physical deformity in a sense, and switching that and making it that it's more, it's Ellie Chu is encumbered by her own, and it's also very subtly woven in, but you do know it right away, which is why I don't feel bad about spoiling that. But her love or affection towards Aster is it's hampered by something that's not just like insecurity or maybe she won't find me attractive. Well, if she doesn't find me attractive, it's for things much more complicated than my nose.
Right.
So I thought that this movie handled that with such grace and loveliness. And also it was so delightful throughout. It had the movie it reminded me the most of, because one of the great things through this, there are all these classic film references she refers to, and then we see His Girl Friday at one point. There's
Casablanca.
There's a Wim Wenders like,
is that
whole
the beautiful
beat.
Friendship one?
Yeah, and so there's
the wings,
all these
wings
things
of desire,
I feel
the longing line.
Yeah, and I feel like there's so many movies.
Oh, wait, whoa. I'm sorry, stop. Did you ask if the beautiful friendship line was from a Wim Wenders movie? Iffy Wadaway. It is the last line of Casablanca, which is one of like the most classic American films ever made. And I almost never call you out on not knowing this stuff, but
that was amazing.
Honey.
You know.
Yeah, I saw when I heard that line, I was like, man, that line's familiar, but I don't know which movie this is. Woo. I'm gonna wait till we're on air till I ask Alonzo.
Okay, next rewind episode, we're watching Casablanca.
If
he has ever seen Casablanca, we're watching it. Okay, I'm sorry.
Well, if
I have not seen Casablanca, that is true.
No. Please, you can always interrupt.
I envy you getting to see it for the first time. And when you see it, it's going to be like watching Goodfellas, where you realize it's been quoted and copied a million times by like every other movie since.
Except
for The Wizard of Oz, no movie is quoted more than Casablanca.
Right. There's a reason you'd recognize that line outside of context, only because of context.
I was really charmed by this. Like, I have been wanting another Alice Wu movie for the last 16 years. Like, she made a really impressive debut with a film called Saving Face, a lovely, lovely lesbian romantic comedy with, you know, the great Joan Chen. And, it was that kind
and
of thing
Lin
where
Chen.
Like, exactly. And Lin Chen too. Yeah. And for years I was like, when's she going to do another one? When's she going to do another one? And then it was like, then you just stop asking, you know? And there was a whole piece in the New York Times where basically she was like, she kind of bailed out and lived on. Like, she'd made some early Microsoft investments and took care of her mom when she was sick. But then her mom got better. She's like, okay, well, I'm going to write another script then. In a way, I wish, like, I missed the 7 to 12 movies that she might have made in the ensuing time. But it's great that she's back. I think she really gets this genre so well. The fact that she's named Alice Wu and her hero is Ellie Chu, it's like, that's like if Drea made a movie about a girl named Drew Clark, you know?
Yes.
But
the
wild
adventures of Drew Clark.
Exactly. Yeah. I loved all three of these characters. They're all really interesting, and you want the best for them, even though you know they're not all going to get what they want necessarily, or they don't even know what they want half the time. And I did like, as Ray was saying, that it wasn't just like, because I think, like, if you look at the P.S. I Love You movies, which are charming, To All the Boys I've Loved Before movies,
rather. To
All the
Boys. P.S. I Love You is terrible.
Different one, yeah. Different epistolary romance. To All the Boys I've Loved Before, what does have the John Hughes references, and it's fine, but, like, it's nice to see a movie that's veering into a different direction here. You know, that they talk about The Remains of the Day, the novel, and why it's better than the movie. Like, it's like, okay, we're... All right, because I like a movie about smart teens where the writing and the acting convinces you that they have indeed written or read the books that they're talking about. That was one of the things I liked about Beautiful Creatures, which didn't really go anywhere. That was trying to be a YA franchise, but that was a movie where they would talk about like Bukowski or Henry Miller or whatever, and you believe that they'd actually read it. I liked all three of them very much. I think the performances, are terrific. We should mention the names here. Leah Lewis plays Ellie, Alexis Lemire is Aster, and Daniel Deemer is Paul. I hope they all get great stuff out of this. They're also the most convincing as high school students in the movie. Everybody else looks a little old, maybe.
Yeah,
I was thinking, but you know,
their philosophies of what love means or why you love someone or what it stands for both grew as they did and were consistent. I keep saying believable, but consistently believable for teenagers. And it's one of the things that's incorporated into Ellie and Paul's friendship that I love so much, because the core of this is these two, you know, she's learning, she's literally coaching him, and it's not just she's writing, she's trying to explain what she's writing to him. She's showing him the movies or explaining the books to him and going through all of this stuff. And they, it also shows not just what you get out of love, but that love can come in different ways, that Ellie and Paul's friendship, that you watch two people who grow because of their connection with someone else that was unexpected, which again is normally, that's the growth you would get from a traditional romantic storyline. So seeing it from these two people who are platonic friends and also unknowing romantic rivals of a sort was such a nice, but I loved the growth of that and the that it also changed what they thought love should mean to them.
And I think that's what's so interesting about this movie, because as in most rom-coms, you know, you usually have the movie telling you this is what love is. And this one is so, it's like pontificating on like, what is love to you? What is the, and I think, you know, we eventually get somewhere, but I think at the end, it kind of still leaves it in your hands to be what is it? Is it work? Is it something that just happens automatically? And I think all in all, just based on the movie, it's kind of saying it there is no one definition. It can be whatever it is, you know? And there's so much that I would love to say about that idea and thought, but it would have to reveal what happened. So I'm gonna stop right there and let y'all enjoy it. Cause if you're listening to this and you have not watched it yet, it is out now on Netflix. So don't hit pause yet. Let us finish this episode out. Then, but after we're done, pop on Netflix.
Are we at the voting stage then?
Yeah, I think we're at the voting stage. I think it's time.
I love a vote, you guys. Like, you know me. There are things I love. I love cats and voting.
Get the paper ballots.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, well, Sean told me that I have to vote or die.
Yes. That's exactly. I know what Sean you mean as well. That's hilarious.
I know that's.
And then he invited you to his all white party. Yeah.
No, I didn't get that invite. No, I'm still waiting on it.
Well, I'll go since I love voting. Mm-hmm. I'll rush to the front of this ballot line. Are we doing the stream it on Hangouts?
I think stream it over Netflix party since it's a Netflix
party makes more sense. I adored this movie. I'm very happy that we watched it. I found it was one of those things, like, I love a good easy view, but it's also thoughtful, and there were no missteps. There was no, oh, I really liked it, but I thoroughly enjoyed this and found it perfectly escapist, yet totally rooted in reality.
Yeah, I'd say absolutely watch this on Netflix party. It is a delight and charming from start to finish. I love that Netflix is sort of becoming the place where teen rom-coms are happening, or rom-coms in general, and often with very diverse casts. Like, if you guys missed Let It Snow or Told the Boys I've Loved Before, or the one with Ali Wong, whose name I can never remember, Always Be My Maybe, like, you know, check all those out too. But I'm thrilled that Alice Wu is back. Like, you know, we have how many, like, major league, you know, queer female Asian American filmmakers do we have? We have Alice Wu.
We have Alice Wu.
So, yeah. So welcome back. Make more movies. Create more Alice Wus. Do all the things. Yay. I'm thrilled this is here. Watch it.
Yeah. The only thing I could say about all that, Alonzo, is you love to see it.
And you do.
You'd love to see this movie over Netflix watch party. So definitely check that out. Yeah, this movie was so, there were so many touching moments. So many touching moments. I don't even want to say anything. I wanted to catch you off guard and get those tears rolling. But there's so many heartwarming, touching moments and scenes that'll get you going. And the father and their relationship also was phenomenal
Related to the father, I will say his name is Colin Cho. Please go look him up because he's a total smoke show and has done a ton of martial arts movies. And I would not want to not objectify him as we're discussing things.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's a lot of thirst in this, but I left it. You know, I want you, like I said, I'm not even going to spoil the thirst for you, but I was thirst, you know, definitely denim jacket, buy energy, coming at you. I knew it. Dead giveaway. You know, I knew it. I saw it. I like it. All right, y'all. Well, we're gonna go ahead and take a quick break, but first you're gonna hear from the sexiest people on earth. Hey everyone, how's it going? MaxFun is running a survey to help figure out which advertisers are a good fit for our audience.
We'd like to know more about you.
We're still primarily audience supported, and that will always be the case, but advertisers can be a helpful source of income, especially right now.
Yeah. Tell us how you like helpful sources of income.
The results of the survey will help us talk to some new advertisers and convince them to give us a shot.
Come on, what do you have to lose?
The survey is short, shouldn't take more than 10 minutes, and you'll get a discount at the Max Fun store for filling it out. Also, our gratitude.
Gratitude.
Go to MaximumFun.org/ad survey to fill it out.
Do it.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Whiteyway, and in the virtual booth with me are...
Alonzo Duraldi.
Drea Clark.
Since most of us are still social distancing and are either starved for companionship or getting sick of the people we're quarantined with, we're going to conduct a movie character roommate draft. Each of us will draft two movie characters that we would like to be trapped with during quarantine. Once that's done, we will also assign the worst possible roommate for each of us. Alonzo, start us off.
Well, you know, look, as I've mentioned several times, Dave White has been doing a great job, you know, among other things, cooking, like really, you know, just keeping things interesting and fresh and delicious. And that's been wonderful. And I think maybe to give him a break in that department, I would draft Julia Child from Julie and Julia. She could chop some onions and, like, you know, make us some cocoa van or whatever. I think she'd have funny stories when she wasn't making stuff. So, as played by Meryl Streep, certainly. But yeah, Julia Child is going to be my first one.
And that iteration of her from that movie is so joyful and happy. That's a good energy to have in your home.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not the later one, the only hear on the phone.
Right.
What about you, Drea?
Okay, so in a totally different vein, I am self-isolated, and I mostly really enjoy not having a lot of the people and the arguments. So I like a calm environment, but I also would like some eye candy, thoughtfulness, and someone I want to snuggle with. So my response is Atticus Finch from To Kill a Mockingbird. Because he looks like Gregory Peck, which is just wins across the board, but is also a very soft-spoken, even-tempered. I imagine he would spend a lot of time reading in another area, but he would be there to discuss things if I wanted to, but wouldn't require me to, like, babysit him or his emotions or entertain him. And also, you guys, he looks like Gregory Peck. So I don't know if I was clear enough about that.
Atticus has had live-in help for a long time, so he may just assume a certain level of, you know, cleanliness and meals on the table. Just be ready for that. He's not coming with Calpurnia. He's going to be alone.
Sure. That part of it's fine. He can eat SpaghettiOs out of the pot with me, and he can like it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Look, y'all, you know, I'm thinking about not only who I'm stuck with, but I'm also thinking about what I'm doing, who I'm doing it with. And that, of course, means that I'm going to have to go with Korg from Avengers Endgame, from Thor Ragnarok, and soon to be Thor Love and Thunder, the giant rock man voiced by Taika Waititi, who we saw in the game, soft-hearted, warm-hearted, but also great at video games. I need somebody who's in there clapping with me when we're playing video games, who's chill, and you know, who I can blame my broken furniture on. So the giant rock man and me are staying in the crib together. I think Naomi would find him delightful, and he seems like he'd be a great uncle energy. It seems like he's great with kids. He doesn't like people saying mean things to him on the internet. So that's my pick.
I love that for you. I really do. I did not see that coming, and I like it.
I don't know if you can clear the doorways, but you know, I'm sure we can. Make it happen.
Also, you would constantly just be able to the content you would get out of just tweeting what he had just said would be its own. Do you know what I mean? Like its own cottage industry. Yeah,
your Twitch feed would blow up.
Definitely. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Good. Okay.
For my second pick. For my second one, I was thinking, like, you know, who's just fun, good energy, good conversation, you know, a delight to be around. And I thought for a second about Judy Maxwell from What's Up, Doc, but things tend to like blow up or catch fire in her wake. She's just is one of those people that like brings disaster with her. So instead, I'm going to go with Tiffany Haddish's character from Girls Trip. She's fun, and I just, you know, I think she would really bring a really vibrant energy to the room, and really just kind of like, you know, keep the quips coming, and yeah, I just think she would be dynamite company.
Mine is a very different energy. Maybe it shows that I've been like alone for a while. So I have me, I have Atticus with his legal briefs in the other room. And the other component I really think is going to bring this, I want Wally. I want Wally to live with us. And Alonzo, I had actually already given some thought to Atticus's, you know, cleaning. Wally just scoots around cleaning things up. That's all he's doing. If I could have a little robot cleaning out my cat box, vacuuming. Speaking of, you know who would love Wally? My cats. My cats will follow that little round dude around. Oh my gosh. Happiness for days. He'll keep things sparkling. And then he's just a little sense of joy. He could come by with his sweet little meeps, his little beeps, and give me happy moments.
How many times can you bear to watch Hello, Dolly, though?
I mean, Atticus has never seen a TV practically, so he can watch it repeatedly.
He's loving all of it.
Yeah.
He'll just think that's what color films are.
Right. me, Atticus, and Wally. Just there you go.
Oh yeah, that just looking at that couch. The couch would be all y'all sitting together. That's
don't forget my two black cats.
Yeah.
All right, bring us home, Miffy.
All right. You know, everything y'all said makes a lot of sense to me. I had to do a lot of thought. You know, I definitely want someone, you know, because I don't want to be the only one cooking. Someone we know is a great cook. Someone, you know, great conversationalist, fun to be around, lifts our spirits, just, you know, just being in the same room. Someone who, you know, is not going to be afraid to keep me in my place, too, but also great cuddler. No, we're going with Aunt May from Homecoming and Far From Home. We're getting that energy in the home. She's going to build my home, and we'll build a strong home together. I think amazing stepmother.
You set that up as if the end game wasn't actually you getting to have a romantic relationship with May. You were like, ooh, look at all these altruistic reasons. I really thought out this practically of why this would be great.
It all roads lead to Marissa Tomei.
Yes, they do. And you know that's the pick. I think that's a great house too. Korg, great uncle energy. And I think Aunt May would also be great stepmom energy for Naomi.
This is amazing.
So, yeah, and they're all in the MCU, so it's, you know, you're not warping time and space or anything.
Yeah, she's not going to be weirded out by this giant rock man living with us. She'll be like, okay, I've seen people turn to dust. I can deal with this.
Amazing. Okay, I like this.
All right. So now we're teaming up to see who would be the worst possible roommate for each person. I mean, Dre, you cracked your knuckles as if you already had some loaded. Let me, what you got for Alonzo?
Okay.
We'll work on
Alonzo. So if you and I are going to come up with someone to throw into the mix for Lonzo. And so what we currently have, mm-hmm. we have Alonzo, we have his husband, who's doing a lot of cooking, who's now sharing that cooking with Julia Child, and then being amused mm-hmm. by Dina from Girls Trip.
Mm-hmm.
So one idea I have of like, oh, that's a lot of personality, lot of energy. So like in the worst case scenario, who's the most personality and energy that would drive all of that? And all I can think of is old Ruby Rude from The Fifth Element, Chris Tucker's character.
Right? See, because that was my plan. I was like, first, we just need a straight man in there to make it up. And as gender fluid as Ruby Rude, he's pretty, gender fluid, but he's trying to bang ladies that whole movie, and is not going to stop with Dina or Julia Child.
He's going to try him
in that microphone.
Can you imagine Dina's annoyance of this guy or Julia being tested?
Alonzo, can I use your olive oil? Alonzo, I need your olive oil. Can I get your olive oil, Alonzo? I'm trying to make spaghetti.
Oh my god! Oh, it's so funny. How do I make this happen?
Please,
I'm trying to make spaghetti. Oh, good. Oh, nice. Okay.
That's all I could just picture. It's just
Drea, I was trying to think, would it be worse to give her somebody who is like completely not organized, not put together, not, you know, dealing with their stuff? Or would it be to give her somebody who is more of an organizer than she is? Like, would that be her kryptonite? Ooh. Would be to somebody who's like more calendary, more ballady, more
more Tracy
on her organization.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was thinking of Sally from When Harry Met Sally, whom Billy Crystal refers to as Miss Hospital Corners.
Oh my gosh.
That's hilarious. I love the idea of a character that most people would think of as being a welcome addition to their life. Would be, and honestly, if I had to hear her order once, you know, her whole thing of like all the very exacting substitutions, every time I've watched that, I'm like, oh, we would not dine together. Ever. No, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh my god, did she even hit on Atticus in front of me? This is horrible.
Yeah, definitely.
That's
a bitey kind of way.
All right, so Drea, who do we inflict upon Iffy?
I have someone in mind here, and I will say him doing his very low key, like his own matchmaking with Aunt May makes this feel like it could be even more of a correct assumption. Stifler from the American Pie movies.
Oh, I hate like that man
that
in my house so much.
Would not shut up ever. He would talk so inappropriately around Naomi with no boundaries. He would viciously and stupidly and clumsily hit on May. He would try and join you in the rock. I mean, not the rock. Korg. He would try and play video games with you guys, but he would not know how to. He would get you killed. He would be shooting you, and you'd be like, "You're on my team." It would be a lot of that.
He would jizz in Iffy's black cherry and coffee sparkling water.
Oh my god!
For a laugh.
Yeah.
No, that man would not make it out this house alive.
He would also do a bunch of stuff like he would just go out in public all the time and then just come back home.
He'd lick the lamppost and come home and not think about it. Yeah.
No, he's never washed his hands in his life. Why start now? Like, you guys were really good at finding people who would annoy each other.
I know. Awful.
That was solid. Yeah, a lot of thought went into that, and I truly enjoyed it. I don't know. Let us know in the Facebook who's your ideal roommate.
Yes.
Who you know? Are some of our worst roommates some of your best roommates? I want to see who's going to be like,
"That's
Sally,
true. Somebody's going to want Sally. And you can come get her."
Please.
We are ready to let her go.
Okay. Well, we're done with that because now it is time for our staff picks. So, Drea, why don't you start?
Mine is a film from just a couple of years ago, but it is currently on Hulu, and you can probably rent it as well. It is called Juliet Naked. It is written by Nick Hornsby. It's directed by Jesse Peretz, who, fun fact, was the bassist for the Lemonheads back in the day. Mm. And Jesse's also directed, he directed The Chateau and
Our Stupid Brother.
My Idiot Brother with both with Paul Rudd.
Oh, maybe that's it.
And, yeah. And he did a huge chunk of the Girls TV show. But Juliet Naked stars Rose Byrne, Ethan Hawke, and Chris O'Dowd. And Rose and Chris break up at the beginning from a longtime relationship. And Ethan Hawke plays this very big underground musician who has been off the grid and disappeared for years. And Chris O'Dowd is his biggest fan. And he and Rose somehow meet as pen pals and then in person and a relationship ensues. So it's kind of romantic comedy, got some music stuff, got some whatever. It's one of my favorite things I've seen Ethan Hawke in as, because I love him when he does big drama because it's a fun reach. But this is just a nice, likable, he is very believable as a musician that was big in the 90s and then disappeared. Who knew? It's a good look for him. But it's a nice, enjoyable, it's a rom-com with a little more sort of emotional depth, but I guess most rom-coms do. So how dismissive of me. Anyway, Juliet Naked.
So, there have been a lot of films that have been going direct to streaming, and whether they were originally going to be, you know, day and date or streaming only or whatever, given that there's no movies to see in the theater, they're maybe getting a little more attention than they might have otherwise. And I'm really glad that I caught up with this one because it's the kind of thing I might have missed for one reason or other. This is an Icelandic film called A White, White Day. Premiered at the Cannes Film Festival last year, won an acting award in Critics Week, and it is now streaming on Film Movement, and they've got the thing set up where you can pick what theater you want to be your to be their partner on it. They get half the proceeds or a chunk of the proceeds. I actually wound up sponsoring an art house chain that I used to go to all the time when I was growing up in Atlanta. So, you know, you're welcome, LaFont. Anyway, this is a movie that I almost don't want to tell you what it's about because it's a movie that sort of slowly takes you where it's going and you're not really sure what it's going to be. But it is about a widow who is a police officer who's currently sort of suspended from the force. You see him going to these therapy sessions that they're requiring him to go to, and you come to find out what exactly happened to his wife, what he thinks might have happened before she died, and how that impacts the way he lives now and the way he deals with the rest of his family. It's very cold and spare and Icelandic in a lot of ways. Like, this is not set in Reykjavik. It's this like small coastal town in the middle of nowhere. But it's a movie that on the one hand is giving you that real sort of spare chilliness, but also at the same time gets you really inside these characters' skin and understanding their emotional lives and how they feel about stuff. So it's a cool balancing act. You're expecting it's going to be all really sort of stark and emotionless, but it's actually ultimately very empathetic, even though you get these really cool, like, long shots and stationary camera montages, which is a thing I love. Anyway, very cool Icelandic movie. If you've never seen an Icelandic movie, I don't know that I had seen all that many. Worth checking out again on Film Movement, A White, White Day.
My pick was the pick I originally was going to do last week because I just wanted to do an anime movie. And I did end up with Promare. But this one I rewatched because we talked about it on Nerdificent. And boy, does this thing hold up. I'm even reading the manga that goes with it. I'm talking about Akira, which was the movie that shook up, January 1st, 1988, shook up the world of anime. 1 year before I walked this earth, this movie exploded on the scene, and then a 1-2 punch from Japan as Grave of the Fireflies comes out a few months later. Wow. So this was like really just a pow 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 for anime movies in general for them to be taken seriously. You can catch either of those. So definitely watch it. It still holds up, still intense and wild. And as someone who's reading the manga, they watered it down. So for it to be intense, even without the way it was in the manga, that just lets you know. And
I have not seen that movie since you were pooping in a diaper, but I should definitely revisit.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I'm gonna rewatch it one more time because I got mad because I got the DVD Blu-ray set and I watched the DVD, not the Blu-ray, and I was like, I gotta watch it again because I didn't see it. I didn't see it in the Blu-ray. Now it's time for 5-star reviews, and if you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it on air, like this one from MD Hiker. This show is like one of those combos that is perfect: gin and tonic, pizza and beer, beef and black pepper, tomatoes and olive oil. The cast and their guests bring me great joy and great suggestions, and I never miss an episode.
Thanks.
Thank you so much, MD Hiker.
That's awesome.
I feel like the levels of combos, like those are, you were right, those are all great combos, but like beef and black pepper, pizza and beer. Like, it's like, yeah, put the black pepper on the
tale,
beef, but pizza and beer.
A tale as old as time. You know? Beef yeah. And black pepper.
It all comes
that.
Back to olive oil.
That's true.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You gotta, for your spaghetti. as a reminder, if you'd like to buy a Jumbotron to promote something or have us call out a friend, maybe because they're using your olive oil for their spaghetti, head on over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. And next week, we'll be discussing the new Beanie Feldstein doing a British accent movie, How to Build a Girl, with writer and podcast host Elizabeth Lame.
She's actually doing an Irish accent.
Oh.
There you go.
Interesting.
Immediate fun fact.
Interesting. Again, the number for the Who Shot line is WSY-803-1664. Make it your quarantine activity, calling into the Who Shot line. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, just tweet at us at Who Shot Your Pod. Or you can hit us up at the Facebook group, which can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYourPodcast. Or you can send us an email at WhoShotYou@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.